So anyway, welcome to our panel, which is Accommodating Vichy and the Germans in Occupied France. I'm Sarah Fishman, and I'm going to be presiding. I'm a professor at the University of Houston. And our first speaker is going to be Sandra Ott, who is a professor, associate professor in Basque Studies at the University of Nevada, Reno, which I recommend that everybody come to next year. Mm-hmm. She has a PhD in anthropology from the University of Oxford, and so we're very happy that we've recuperated her into the history field. And she has her first two books, The Circle of Mountains, A Basque Shepherding Community, 1981. The second, War, Judgment, and Memory in the Basque Borderlands, 1914 to 1945, 2008, and just came out in paper.
Yes.
And the book manuscript, which is in press, Living with the Enemy, German Occupation, Collaboration, and Justice in the Western Pyrenees, 1940 to 1948. So,
thank you. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you all for being on this panel. The title of my paper is A Pro-Vichy Mayor and Indiscreet Ladies, Cohabitation and Accommodation in a Basque Village. Based upon the trial dossier of a pro-Vichy mayor in the French Basque country, this paper challenges the common finding that regular public displays of Franco-German amicability, especially those involving French women, led to female headshaving and an appearance before a post-liberation court. Although the dossier is frustratingly thin and leaves many outcomes unknowable, the case of Pierre Doyenart provides an unusual lens through which to explore the circumstances that led members of a small face-to-face Basque community to put aside their political and ideological differences with their mayor, to tolerate his very close social relations with German officers, to defend him adamantly at the liberation, and to refrain from punishing his wife and three young daughters for their improper wartime liaisons with German soldiers. The women in question spent entire afternoons chatting with German officers on a hotel terrace. They often strolled with Germans along the promenade in nearby Biarritz. Both they and Pierre Doyenart learned the German language. And Madame Doyenart regularly offered the occupiers generous Basque hospitality in her home. Her 16-year-old daughter, Annie, befriended a German soldier, Helmut, of the same age. Yet the Doyenart women were neither arrested nor had their heads shaved. Why did fellow villagers and the local liberation committee not pursue them? Why did villagers testify in favor of their mayor after his arrest in November 1944? Now, Robert Gildy's important work, Marianne in Chains, reveals that ordinary French people often learned to live with the Germans in their midst. In Gildy's study, Franco-German cohabitation involved French men and women and German men in a wide range of private and public interactions. In rural parts of the Loire Valley, local mayors often mediated Franco-German cohabitation. They had the unenviable task of meeting German demands for food, labor, and other resources, while also protecting the interests of their community. And Pierre Doyenart played that role effectively in the coastal Basque town of Guattari. Providing a different perspective on Franco-German relations, Philippe Burin views collaboration as various types of accommodation. And I quote, "Accommodation is a regular phenomenon in almost any occupation, where certain points or interfaces of contact are inevitably created, and some adjustment to the new situation has to be made," unquote. According to Burin's conceptualization, structural, non-deliberate accommodation took place when people performed jobs essential to the functioning of public services and the French economy while simultaneously aiding the Germans. Self-interest drove what Burin calls deliberate, opportunistic accommodation, in which people sought to improve a situation of uncertain outcome and, in so doing, help the Germans either directly or indirectly. Opportunistic accommodation, quote, occurred within certain limits with one eye always kept on how the situation was developing, unquote, and it required the French to enter into social relations with the occupiers. Using police and judicial documents written from November 1944 through 1945, I tell the stories of the Doyenarts from a post-liberation perspective so that you can weigh the evidence both for and against Doyenart and appreciate how difficult it was to gauge the extent to which someone was a collabo and or a patriot in that gray zone of occupied France. A picturesque seaside community located halfway between Saint-Jean-de-Luz and Biarritz, Guattari had a population of around 800 people when the German infantry occupied the Basque coast on June 27, 1940. From the summer of 1942, German infantry divisions oversaw the construction of casements for the Atlantic Wall all along the Basque coast. Based some 10 kilometers from Guattari, the division was there for 16 months, a duration that enabled many Germans to become acquainted with the local population. And initially, this division had 4,500 soldiers. An artillery unit of the German Navy established its headquarters in Guattari, where Doyenart had a small repair shop. Now, he did belong to the Croix de Feu before the war. He became mayor of Guattari in 1941. When he was urged to join the LVF in 1942, he refused to do so. As the mayor, he had to find accommodation for 200 German soldiers and 70 officers, for whose comfort he constantly paid, quote, exacting attention, unquote. Doyenart often dined with certain officers, was always diplomatic, and sought, above all, to avoid conflict with them. The post-liberation authorities arrested him on November 14, 1944, on charges of collaboration with the enemy. They also accused him of having enlisted in the Waffen-SS and for allegedly donating money to the anti-Bolshevik Legion, and he was interned in the camp in Bayonne-Polo-Berris. 1 week before his arrest, a Jewish former resident of Guattari, Monsieur Baer, wrote to Doyenart from Paris. He expressed delight that his villa had suffered so little damage during the occupation and that some important pieces of furniture had been returned. He enclosed a money order for 1,800 francs and asked Doyenart to settle his account with his housekeeper. He promised to send the Basque mayor a gratuity to the caretaker for having looked after the villa. Madame Baer wanted to know what had happened to a trunk she'd left with a neighbor. That trunk contained linen she very much wanted to recover. Monsieur Baer closed his letter with expressions of immense gratitude for all that Pierre Doyenart had done for them and added, quote, I greatly regret that you are no longer in charge of Guattari, unquote. On November 14th, the same day of Doyenart's arrest, judicial police interrogated a local garage owner who served on the local liberation committee. And he told police, I quote, it is undeniable that Doyenart was seen with the Germans, seeming even to be closely linked to them, often eating with them in a particular restaurant where he spent lots of money. His political views lined up exactly with Vichy. Villagers didn't complain about his activities because he made only a partial list of STO workers, and when the Germans ordered a requisition of bicycles, he gave them his own and promised another 10, but that never happened. If he never at any time favored the resistance, he hadn't committed a grave error, in my view, unquote. On the same day, another member of the local liberation committee told judicial police that even though he and Doyenart had opposing political views, Doyenart had kept him on as Guattari's town hall secretary from November 1941 until the liberation, in spite of Vichy's instructions. He stated that Doyenart, quote, had maintained good administrative relations with the occupiers, behaved very diplomatically, and thus avoided conflict with the Germans and repression by them, unquote. The man also observed that, quote, if Doyenart's relations with the Germans seemed rather too cordial, they enabled the population to live in relative tranquility despite the heavy German presence for the duration of the occupation. As for his personal relationships, the man added, I can't give you any details as I lead a very secluded private life and have no relationship with Doyenart. In his administrative capacity as mayor, Doyenart was far from being a resistor. All the same, he helped people in trouble with the occupiers as much as he could. At the end of 1941, he persuaded the Germans to free a man arrested for keeping a gun. In 1942, he hid an STO evader and helped the Hunts, an American couple living in Guattari, whom the Germans wanted to deport. Doyenart prevented it from happening. The general view here was that he was a worthy fellow who rendered services to everybody, even his political adversaries. On the day of Doyenart's arrest, the new mayor of Guattari also lent support to his predecessor and said that only six people actually went to work in Germany for the STO. Doyenart always helped. Another man testified that Doynard had helped get his son to Spain to avoid the STO. So there were all these testimonies. On November 24th, shortly after Doynard's arrest, the American couple wrote to the Purge Commission, and I quote, "Dear sirs, we've lived in Guattari since 1921. Doynard protected us from the Germans. On April 23rd, 1943, the sous-préfect in Bayonne told us to vacate our property. Doynard ensured the Germans never requisitioned our villa, and we never had a German lodger, thanks to him." On November 25th, Adrien Thierry, who was the husband of Nadine de Rothschild, sister of the barons Nathaniel and Philippe de Rothschild, wrote to Madame Doyonnart from Paris, and I quote, "Dear Madame, I am astonished that your husband is suspected of collaboration. For May 1940, he safeguarded valuable items for me, antiques, paintings, rare stamps, and oriental rugs that the Germans would have requisitioned. As I am Jewish, he took considerable risk in helping me." Unquote. During the exodus, the Thierrys had rented a room in the Doynard's villa and had entrusted their property to him. Doynard hid the valuables and prevented their requisition by the Germans. At the end of November 1944, the commander in Polo Berry's camp reported that a large number of internees did not know why they'd been arrested and demanded interrogation, and Doynard was among them. Commissions to verify the reasons for internment had been formed in late October, but the authorities didn't interrogate many internees at Berry's until after January of 1945. They questioned Doyonnart on December 6, 1944. There's only one testimony, surviving testimony, in this dossier, and he admitted to having donated 100 francs to the LVF for social work, so-called. He denied having had anything to do with the Waffen-SS, and said he'd never collaborated with the Germans voluntarily. His work was war work, exclusively under orders from the Kommandateur. And he said he had 7 workers. When they suspected they would be requisitioned, his partner wanted to shut it down, but he kept it open. He cared for the future and the safety and the well-being of his workers. And they never did any work, major work, for the Germans. And as he said, "I did my best guard to safeguard the best interests of my fellow citizens, both present and absent. All the inhabitants of Guattari can tell you how much I resisted the Germans' demands." Unquote. There's a long gap in the dossier then. Doynard remained in the internment camp. He finally ended up in Gurs in April of 45. And there's a further long gap until October 19th, 1945, when the president of the local liberation committee in Guattari told the police that as a Vichy mayor, Doynard had established relations with the Germans out of necessity, an example of Beaurain's structural accommodation. Whether or not it was non-deliberate or opportunistic accommodation, it's impossible to say. And the president of the local liberation committee said that his attitude had facilitated relations between local people and the Germans. If he could be reproached for anything, it would be for having too obligingly gathered around the well-stocked table of the secretary to the Kommandantur in Guattari. He ate well. I'll go quickly because I think I'm running out of time. In October of 1945, the police also interrogated Annie Doyart, who was by then 18. The authorities had intercepted a letter to her from a young German POW, Helmut, in Grenoble. And he wrote in his letter, "When I arrive at your house, you will welcome me as tenderly as when you sent me your news." Helmut's tone of intimacy allegedly astonished Mademoiselle Doyonnart, as she regarded him only as a war protege. And she interpreted his, quote, misplaced enthusiasm as an expression of gratitude for the letter and food parcel she'd sent him. Annie insisted that Helmut had not been planning an escape from the internment camp, but was merely looking forward to seeing them again in Guattari once he was liberated. And Madame Doyonnart told the police that she regarded Helmut as a charming, well-brought-up young man. She, too, had written to him and insisted that his relations with her family had always been perfectly correct. And the police inspector said that, quote, "The statements made by mother and daughter were very spontaneous and seemed entirely sincere. Madame Doyonnart embodies the kind of hospitality unique to the Basques, as confirmed by the president of the local liberation committee." Now, he also noted that after the liberation, Madame Doyenard and her daughters often frequented the military hospitals in Biarritz where they had war protégés. Madame Doyenard, quote, invited Negroes and Moroccans into her home and voluntarily pushed the wheelchairs of mutilated French soldiers, unquote. Her daughters all passed an exam to work as German interpreters for the French Air Force, yet the inspector added, the ladies' wartime behavior was always most improper. According to public opinion, Poitpierre Doyenard had paid for their indiscretions. The inspector said, it's not known just how far the women's relations with the Germans went, yet no grave consequences ensued for Guattari, no arrests or deportations. And this leads one to conclude that the people of Guattari enjoyed a measure of tranquility in their relations with the Germans owing to the attitude of the mayor and his family. Unquote. So having discovered nothing important during his investigations, the inspector suspended his investigations but advised that the Doyenard women should remain under discreet surveillance. Finally, Pierre Doyenard appeared before a special court in December of 1945, and the court found him guilty of having donated 100 francs to the anti-Bolshevik Legion, and the court decreed he'd entered into a state of national indignity through his anti-national acts. But they also observed that Doyenard, quote, seemed most often to have used his relations with the German to aid citizens under his jurisdiction as mayor of Guattari. Now, it's not known who called for Doyenard's arrest. Members of the FFE, Purge Commission, and despite several testimonies in his favor by members of the local liberation committee, as well as by Jews and an American couple, Doyenard provides an example of mediated Franco-German cohabitation and a kind of Franco-German accommodation that was at once structural, deliberate, and opportunistic. Although described as a pro-Vichy mayor in his political views, Doyenard did not always behave like one. He clearly acted as a shield for his community on numerous occasions, which some quite important post-liberation figures clearly appreciated. His indiscreet ladies fared far better. Neither popular nor legal justice targeted them for punishment despite their close social relations with the enemy. Madame Doyenard in particular provides an interesting example of Marin's deliberate opportunistic accommodation, but there's no clear evidence that self-interest motivated her. By regularly offering Germans her Basque hospitality, she treated the enemy as a guest. Franco-German commensality entailed a measure of intimacy that most citizens deplored, and Helmut's letter to Annie hints that some kind of intimacy linked him to Annie Doyart. In some parts of France, she and her mother might well have been an easy target for headshaving. I'm going to skip over some of this. We know that it's been frequently observed that if women frequented German soldiers, it was observed every day that this was regarded as flaunting themselves with the Germans, and quite often in France, as we know from Virgili's work, this ended up in an accusation of horizontal collaboration and female head shaving. Between 1943 and 46, it's estimated some 20,000 French women had their head shaved as punishment for collaboration with the Germans. Now, there was a strong strong German presence on the Basque coast for 4 years, and that's a condition that Virgili says is right for the practice of the tente. Female head shavings did take place in Bayonne and in Pau in that department and in a few small communities, but overall the practice was far less common in the Western Pyrenees than in the other 89 departments in France at that time. The highest incidence of female head shaving during the process of liberation has been variously attributed to a widespread need for scapegoats who would take the blame for collaborationists, a need for revenge against female denouncers and sexual collaborators, a need to cleanse the nation of collaboration symbolically, a need to exorcise feelings of sexual insecurity, a need to reestablish the patriarchal order in France. Now, I've worked in the French Basque Country for 40 years, and during that time I found that both Basque men and women regarded female head shaving as a violation of Basque moral codes that require male respect for women. During field work, many rural Basques condemned the head shavings as inappropriate and offensive behavior. Basque moral codes may have served as a shield in the case of these Doyenart women. Ignored by higher authorities, local citizens who testified in favor of their former mayor may have chosen not to take further action against his wife and daughters because they did indeed feel that he had already paid the price for the women's improper behavior. Now, those of us who work in archives, we all know that when we begin that work, we get excited when a puzzle emerges and you begin to follow a thread of a story. And in this case, as in most puzzles, there are many pieces missing. Thank you.